Hello, everyone. I'm so happy to be here. I've missed you. It seems like it's been forever since I was sitting here, but it hasn't been quite that long. And I think I love Mary Oliver's poetry. It's so expressive, and I think this poem that I read is probably the best way to kind of talk about effort, which is where we are. We're going to talk a little bit about effort tonight and strength. And you can kind of think of it a little bit like, if I think of going somewhere, or let's say we're going towards awakening or going towards liberation, then generosity, virtue, and renunciation is kind of the preparation, all the stuff we do to get ready for our journey. And then wisdom kind of tells us where we're going, where we're at, you know, how, what highways to take, what the weather's gonna look like, that kind of thing. And energy is how we're gonna get there. Without it, you know, we're just gonna basically still be at home. So this talk is sort of about how we move through, how we sort of go towards enlightenment and awareness, but it's not really the way we think about traveling. I don't know how many of you guys saw the movie Contact. Did some people see that movie Contact? Oh, good. A few of you. I don't feel like I'm the only sci-fi geek in the room. But in this movie, Contact, it was about this connection with extraterrestrial beings. Somehow they made contact with us, and they wanted to meet us as humans, and so they sent us the plans to build a spaceship so we could travel and go and meet them. And so, just so happens, Jodie Foster won out the competition to be able to do this traveling. And the plans built this sphere kind of ship thing that didn't look like what we as humans think of a spaceship. And the one thing that was missing was a chair. I mean, they had this huge sphere, but they didn't have a chair to sit in. So they built a chair for Jody to be able to sit and strap herself in for the long ride up into space and go somewhere. And so she's the first person that's ever done anything like this. And of course she gets in the chair, she gets all strapped in, and she's a little nervous, and she's ready to go, ready to take off. And countdown starts, she goes, and then there's all this shaking, this movement. This is like terrifying. And luckily for her, she had this necklace that was very close to her. The necklace flew off, and she reached out to grab it, unbuckled herself out of the chair, reached out to grab it, and the chair went away, just flew out somewhere. And she was suspended in this almost breathless beauty, just there. She didn't need a chair. But because we as humans had this expectation of how you travel and move, they put a chair in there as if somehow that part had gotten lost. But really, in this spaceship, it wasn't that kind of traveling. And ultimately, in the movie, the whole thing took about, I think it was like 18 seconds or something. For some reason, I remember the 18, maybe it was 18 minutes. But it seemed like she was gone for hours. But it wasn't that kind of traveling. And in a way, I think that is what energy. I think this effort, this energy, the word we're going to talk about tonight, I think that's what it points to. It's a paradigm shift in the way we think of effort. And when we make that shift in practice, it dramatically changes the nature of what practice looks like, what capacity looks like. So another way to think about this is in the Eightfold Path, effort is around our mental stability. So even though it's a movement type of practice, this parami is like a movement, it's, on the other hand, it is connected to our mental stability, our groundedness, a sense of stableness. So tonight, I think I'd like to talk about the nature of this energy. It's really, I like the Pali word virya, and so I'm probably going to refer to it as virya. I just think that's a better way to explain it. I'll explain that in a moment. So tonight and next week, we're going to talk about basically the nature of what this virya is, the way I kind of see it in the way I looked at it and when I did all this research. And then in the last half of the month, we'll talk about how to practice. How does this virya kind of show up in practice in a way that we could practice with it? So first, a little bit of understanding, because it always strikes me the way English is so absolute in the way we talk. And I think in some respects, that's why effort, energy, this virya has so, I think it's probably one of the most difficult part of practice. And it causes us the most unnecessary suffering. And I think it's because of the way English is. Just a little bit about where virya is at. It's probably one of the most formidable aspect of an enlightened being. So it's in the five spiritual faculties we talked about at some point. So basically it's your ability to actually awaken into whatever, the capacity for us to awaken. It's one of the seven faculties of awakening. So when we awake, energy is one of the experiences that we experience. It's one of the sort of ways that we move in the world is with this virya. It's one of the, what was called the four bases of power. We don't really talk about them very much, but it's desire and this persistence and tension, discrimination. It's the sort of the backbone, if you will, of your practice. The more you begin to stay connected to this sense of desire to awaken, having an intention to keep practicing, the persistence and this ability to discriminate between this idea of what is thinking and what is reality, what is the felt sense, what is thinking, that basis gives you a lot of power to stay with the practice. It's one of the Eightfold Paths. So in the mental stability aspect of it. I mean, if you think about it, this virya is in, if you talk about awakening or liberating the mind, virya is in that conversation. It's almost as if we cannot awaken without having this aspect of virya or energy or effort, however you want to think about it. Because the reason why I keep changing all these words up is because basically there's a ton of words that come around trying to talk about virya, a ton of words that show up. So in English, we have energy, or we say effort. But when you start reading about it, you're going to find words like vigor. You're going to find words like sustaining, persistence. Find energy, find effort, ardency, strength. These are all the words that show up around virya. So it's a little bit more than just effort, how much you're trying in your practice. So I thought I would do this in three three ways of talking about it. I guess I would think of it as like the natural aspect of virya. Three ways you could think of virya. Maybe we're going to talk about it, kind of open it up a little bit here. So the first way we're going to talk about it is movement. But it's not a movement like a force of will. In fact, when I think about my practice now versus the practice I had when I started, I think I probably spent about 10 to 15 years in wasted effort. I hate to say it like that, but it's just the truth. Because I spent the bulk of my early years trying my best to physically put my attention on my breath. Physically put my attention on the breath. And so I think whenever we think of that effort, that's what comes up for us. The sense of this physical or mental exertion towards something. Because it's energy that we're talking about. But actually, virya has nothing to do with exertion, which is kind of a strange thing. If you think about, virya is what moves us, what propels us into practice. It propels us into liberation. It is the nature of movement in practice. And yet, that movement comes without exertion. So that's what I want to try to see if I can first wander into this a little bit. I have a little quote from Shantideva because I think sometimes he can help me understand what I'm trying to say a little bit better. So he says that where would I find enough leather to cover the entire surface of the earth? So if you're trying to cover the entire surface of the earth, where would I find enough leather? He says, but with leather soles beneath my feet, it's as if the whole world has been covered. Right? So you put the leather here with you, and the whole world gets covered by your walking about, right? And sometimes this idea of trying to move towards enlightenment, we think of it in terms of putting a chair in a spaceship so we can get somewhere, when in reality, we're trying to just be where we are without trying to create the movement. Another way to think about it is, you're not doing anything in this movement. And in the not doing, something gets awakened. In the not doing, something gets stirred within us. I think part of why I was so motivated to sort of put my attention on the breath when I first started practicing is because you, like me, come into the practice, many of us, we come in and the world around us is such a mess that we think, I gotta fix it, clean it up, get my space around me fixed up, use a vacuum cleaner, you know, mow the lawn, get it so that it looks trim and clean. And there's a doing in that. So when we sit down to practice, we are trying to apply the practice to our life in this doing. And that doing, we think, is going to get us somewhere. But because virya is not really an exertion in that way, then it's more of an inner shift. It's more of a turning inward and just being with the space as it is. So this is going to sound kind of like what I think the scientists felt when they were reading the blueprints for the spaceship, because everything about movement feels like it needs effort, exertion to make it happen. Everything about, when we think about any kind of effort, we think there is a requirement that we must exert something to make it move. It's like inertia. You know, if it stopped, if we want it to move, we got to get it moving. And that sense of trying to make our practice move, or make this mindfulness, make this meditation, make this practice that we do liberate us, fix us, make our mind awakened, is wasted effort. It does not do anything towards our awakened mind. It does not do anything towards help us get any closer to a liberated mind. It's hard work, and we do a lot of struggling, do a lot of fighting with it, but it doesn't do anything to change any kind of movement in our life. It doesn't make any movement in our lives. If you think about it, some of us have been practicing, at least when I guess I was probably 15 years into the practice before I kind of understood the nature of the movement of Virya. 15 years into the practice, my life was pretty much exactly the same. But when my understanding of Virya began to shift from this idea of effort being exertion to effort being allowing, is more of what it is, then movement actually started happening in my life, in the practice, and all around me. What Joseph Goldstein calls this is spiritual ardency. It's the wellspring of a courageous heart. It gives us the strength to continue through all the difficulties of the journey. So the question for us is how to practice and cultivate ardency so that it becomes a powerful and onward leading force in our lives. What Virya, the movement of Virya comes, you could think of as spiritual movement. It's a character shift. It's an inner sense of capacity that begins to shift. It doesn't have anything to do with your outside world. So all the effort we do in trying to make our lives better doesn't really affect our practice at all. Because every effort we make in making our lives better is very temporary. And then shortly hereafter, that's going to shift and we'll be right back in the same place again. What the movement of Virya is in our capacity to be with whatever those outer conditions are. It's in this inner growing strength that begins to happen to us. So whatever is going on outside of us becomes less and less and less of a big deal. Because our capacity inward is expanding and growing and livening, awakening, liberating itself from this very otherwise rigid exertion. Can you see that as movement, this inner strength that begins to grow? And then besides the inner strength, this kind of spiritual movement, there's an example. Oh, there's an example I want to give before I go to the next one. I was, the first time I noticed this, when things began to shift and my, something was changing, is I would walk very, very, very slow during walking meditation. And I happened to be at, remember when we used to go to that church on Mercer Island? And I was at this day of mindfulness at that church on Mercer Island. And I'm walking very slow, trying to see if I could notice the moment when movement happened in walking meditation. Like, when does this movement actually happen? And if I can put this in words, what happened was I think I begin to see all this movement around me, like ants and spiders. And because that church was had a beautiful outside greenery, like a foresty green space outside of it. And I could see all this movement going on around me, but I couldn't ever really feel that inner movement in me. So it's almost as if, even though I was doing walking meditation, I was becoming stiller and stiller and stiller, and the world all around me was moving. Another way to sort of sense into that is that this is another time during walking meditation, I was walking faster now, trying to feel myself move. I'm walking, and the world is still. And it looked that way for quite a bit of the walk. But after a while, it began to look like I'm not really moving, and the world's coming at me. And that's a shift in perception, which some of you may or may not, that may be just totally wild. That's like, we need a chair in the spaceship. What I'm trying to help you see is not so much about perception, because that is whoever happens to be perceiving it. What I'm trying to help you see is that while we use the word movement in Virya, it's really just a movement inward and not a movement out. It's a movement towards an inner capacity and beginning to see that inner capacity. And the more you can see your inner capacity, the more lighter your weight becomes, and you can fly amongst whatever's going on around you. So the second kind of thing that comes up around Virya is what Pema Chodron calls nowness. I like that word. And it has to do with the connection between Virya and time. Because when we think about the words like effort and persistence and sustainability, all of that points to a kind of movement in time. So there's a starting and then we're going somewhere. So what Pema Chodron calls this movement is actually a movement within nowness. I should have a quote where she said, the principle of nowness is very important to any effort to establish enlightenment. It's this nowness that we're moving towards. Not the future, we're moving towards nowness. And the more nowness we get, the more enriched, ardent, persistent, and strong we become. That's kind of weird. The less doing and the more nowness, as her word. So another way I think you can think of the word nowness, you could think of it this way, as this word persistence. This ever coming back to the nowness. What we think of returning again, returning again, returning again. But in our practice, beyond the cushion, if you're trying to just live in your regular life, what you're trying to do is just keep returning to the nowness of your life, whatever is arising now in my life. And try not to be so caught in the what's going to happen in the future or regretting what happened in the past, but what is in the nowness of now. It comes from, I think, the more I thought about this, I think it comes from two qualities, a willingness and a wholesome desire. So a willingness is having a sense of this constant willingness to be in the game, this constant willingness to show up for whatever's happening right now. And this wholesome desire towards liberation, enlightenment, whatever you want to call it, that sense of wanting in this nowness to see things more clearly right now, to clearly comprehend what's happening right now. So, willingness and wholesome desire, if you think about it, if you think about any time, like, probably the best way to think about willingness and wholesome desire is how you feel just before you get ready to leave on your retreat, right? There's this upward movement, this sense of upward growth, this virya that comes in the moment now. I mean, okay, so maybe I should back up a little bit, because some of us might be running around crazy right before we get ready to go on a retreat. So maybe, let's say after you get in the car and you're actually out of the house, there's a sense of this upward movement, this energetic excitement that sort of comes in the both the willingness to go on the retreat and this desire for this awakening to happen, this understanding and clear comprehension to come. And then we kind of mess up a little bit, because we take that upward energy and try to use it to control whatever is coming in front of us, to control our retreat, to control what happens around us. We then begin to try to influence the result or the outcome or what we do with this upward energy. And all of that effort to control this energy and point it towards a certain direction and make it do a certain thing, therein lies our suffering and pain. We get kind of trapped then in this kind of wasted effort when we try to take this natural arising energetic kind of, I don't know what you call it other than virya, that arises when we get connected to this willingness and wholesome desire in practice. When we try to control, I can just think about the sits I used to have. Just to sit and practice, I got so caught in controlling it. That it left, it created more difficulties. So see if I can try to explain why the nowness is so important and it is so opposite of trying to control the outcome. So the more you sit, the more we sit, the more we practice, the more we're asking the heart, our inner sort of spiritual soul, whatever you want to call that, we are asking that to open and expand and deepen. And we're asking for this expansiveness. But because expansiveness and opening is very unknown place, right? We don't know what we're going to open up into. We don't know what we're going to expand into. So what we try to take is that energy and make every sit, make our practice look exactly the same. The thing that we know, that's what we try to make our practice stay. We try to control everything around practice so that our efforts create this certain practice. A best way to think of it is we have this great sit. You notice all these things about how you got to the stillness. And so for the rest of the sits after that, you keep trying to do the exact same thing to get that exact same moment back, which creates an unbelievable amount of Thich Nhat Hanh said, the best way to take care of the future, future in practice, future in the way we live around practice, is to take care of just the present moment. We needn't abandon our hope entirely, but unless we channel our energies towards being aware of what's going on in the present moment, we might not discover the peace and happiness that's available right now. And I think that's what happened. When we lose this nowness in our virya, when we lose the ability to just let the now be however it is, we lose the capacity to actually experience the lightheartedness that comes with virya. Instead, if we try to control it, we end up with more difficulty and more suffering, trying to make this practice remain the same. It can't remain the same. It's inherently foolish, is the best word I could think of, to think that it would remain the same. We cannot sit for 40 minutes every week, even if this is the only time you sit, 40 minutes every week in a state of stillness, asking for this expansion, and it not change. Something is going to change. It has to change. Everything about being human has change as its element. So when we try to control our practice with this uplift that we have, try to control that energy, then it has the effect of just creating more and more and more tension. A way to think of it is we're sitting in a chair in a spaceship that's not designed for a chair. And we have to sort of step out of the chair so we can just be in this auspicious moment. For some of you, that's going to make sense because you saw the movie. But for some of you, that's like, okay, not sitting in a chair, I'm sorry. It just so happened. That is the thing I thought of. So instead, with this coming in to nowness, what virya is actually doing is increasing our capacity to be aware more and more subtly and more deeper to whatever's happening right now. And the more subtle and the more deeper, the more clarity we have in the moment right now, the more responsive our action can be, the more connected we can be to the appropriate response or the appropriate thing to do in this moment. And therefore our lives begin to change. Things that used to be messy begins to get cleaned up. Things that used to be, out of sorts or behavior patterns that were destructive, they begin to line up. Not because we do anything so much to change those patterns, but because we see with far more clarity in the nowness what those patterns are doing, what those things are doing, and this falling away or fading away begins to happen. Which points to the very last, points to the last thing I want to talk about, which is this nature of virya is a sustaining energy. So Sharon Salzberg said, to relinquish the futile effort to control change is one of the strengthening forces of true detachment and thus true love. Which is kind of strange because love doesn't seem like it has anything to connect it to virya. But the thing, the reason why I picked that is because I think of loving kindness as friendliness, as a capacity to be with whatever's arising in this friendlier way, not so enmeshed in it that I can't untangle myself from it. So this kind of detached friendliness towards whatever is happening. And what Sharon is pointing to is the more we let go of the need to control what happens and just let the practice actually move us in the way that the practice moves us, actually adjust the lens so we see things clearer and in more focus, then the more connected we are to this kindness, this loving kindness, this detached kind of way of being with whatever's happening in a way that we could actually stay with it, which moves us into the third kind of quality, which is the sustaining nature of virya. One of the definitions I found that said that virya stands for sustained effort to overcome unskillful ways such as indulging in sensuality, ill will, and harmfulness. And so when I first thought about, the reason why I'm putting that here is because when I first started thinking about the way I was going to talk about this, I'm like, I'm trying not to use that word effort, and certainly not sustained effort, because it looks like that means, oh, we got to make ourselves stop being harmful. We got to make ourselves use some kind of exertion so that we don't have all this aversion and ill will, and we're not caught in all this sensuality. So it's sort of like it's just the English way of saying it, that sustained effort is like I got to make myself not harm anybody. But actually, what I'm thinking, the sustaining effort is our nowness, is that ability to just be still and notice whatever is arising. We be still and we notice this arising, and we kind of watch and observe and allow it to be until we see that we see the suffering. We see where the suffering comes from. We see where the difficulties in our life comes from. And we can begin to, it'll begin to fade away. So one way to think about it is, I want to share another point. What Sharon Salzberg said is effort, this effort that we're talking about, is an unconstrained willingness to persevere through difficulty. It's not a harsh, straining, desperate effort, but rather an ardent, wholehearted remembrance of our capacity for freedom. Right effort is the willingness to open where we've been closed. No doing. It's this ability to just be with things that we're otherwise close to come close to what we have avoided, this sense of being more friendlier to connect with things we would otherwise avoid, and to be patient with ourselves and let go of our preconceptions. So basically, this virya, this sustaining effort, isn't sustaining in holding on as much as it is, it's a sustaining capacity to allow, this sustaining capacity to observe what's happening, and kind of trust in the practice to show us an opening of where we're holding on too tightly. It's what I would think of as a balance between this listlessness of sloth and torpor and this extra restlessness that comes from that restless energy. Somewhere in between our anxiety and our boredom, there's a level of energy that comes in practice. And the two qualities that I think generate that energy, we'll probably talk more about these in the next talk, but it is curiosity and interest. That sustaining quality doesn't come from doing, it comes from a curious or interested observing in whatever's happening. So I think it, in the long run, when I think about my practice, when I think about how this practice has changed in my life so dramatically now than what it used to be. I mean, I don't know how to explain it to you. Unless you know me from back when I first started practicing, you might say, it's all right, Tori, I got it. I can see. You don't have to explain it. But I just, the natural stillness and the natural trust in my capacity to be with whatever arises, I don't have to put any effort in that anymore. It's sort of like a continuity of mindfulness, a continuity that has come about because of this sustained effort in just paying attention to suffering. Just paying attention to whatever I called suffering and why I even thought it was suffering in the first place. Where did it come from? How to get here? When does it go? What makes it go? I mean, I was just totally interested in any, the slightest bit of tension. I want to know, how did it get here? Where did it come from? How long did it stay? Did it stay that long the last time? And all of that sustained interest and curiosity in the nature of suffering, how it rose in my life, is where the energy begin to just take hold. Then certain behaviors I outgrew is the best way to think of it. I outgrew some of my anger and reactivity. I kind of outgrew it because it didn't work for me anymore. It was too painful to sit and feel all of that reactivity so much. I kind of outgrew some of the kind of haphazard way I would look at money or time or just practice itself, this kind of haphazard way I applied it. A lot of things that were in my life that I lived through, I just outgrew it. Sort of the way we outgrow clothes, right? We kind of outgrow them, but we don't do anything to outgrow the clothes. But we just kind of outgrow them. Maybe eating a little bit too much. has a little bit to do with it. But most everything in our lives, you can feel that we just outgrow it. It's just a natural changing that begins to happen. So this virya that we're talking about, the kind of virya that's going to sort of carry us on through the rest of the year with these paramis, It's not something that we have to do. It's just creating this kind of interest and curiosity in what's going on with our life, our practice. I think I have one more quote from Pema Chodron. She said, "The Buddha taught that flexibility and openness bring strength." So Buddha taught that flexibility and openness bring strength, and that running away from groundlessness weakens us and brings pain. So I want to leave us on that, because change, impermanence, has a groundlessness feel to it. It has a sense that we're not really sure what's going to happen. And at the same time, that groundlessness, that capacity to be flexible and to be open with whatever's going to happen or whatever shifts or changes that go, that's actually where we get our strength from. That curiosity and interest in that, in whatever arises, that's where our virya is going to take hold and hold us and sustain us. So I think I'll leave it there. So next week we'll talk about the implications of all of this. We'll do a little bit of a summary, but talk about the implications. So I'll take a couple of questions if you guys have some. Yeah.
I have some conditioned response to what is arising and fighting or struggling or suffering.
Yeah.
But when I'm more accepting of what is there, that virya, is that around, is that the energy of that letting go of that tension around what's, you know, that feeling, that resting in the accepting?
Mm-hmm.
Is there something?
Yeah. So the question is that virya sounds like accepting, and I didn't really use that word, but that whenever he sees this kind of tension around controlling some outcome of something, that there's a sense that when he can find the capacity to accept it, that it lessens the suffering, and when he can't, then it's caught in the suffering. That, yeah, so that is exactly it. The reason why I didn't use the word accepting is because what you're talking about is in practice. So that's what we're going to talk about. That's what we're going to talk about in the last half of the talks, because the curiosity and the interest comes on the heels of that being willing to accept whatever this is, and let me investigate it. Let me look deeper into it and see what's going on here. And what you're talking about is that practice to be able to do that. And we're going to talk about the four efforts that go along with that next time in the practice of it. That is what we are, ultimately, that's why virya is so important, because that willingness to feel the rub, sustain our capacity to feel it so we can notice it's there, that also creates the interest in wanting to know, how did it get here? Why is this tension here? And that fuels our ability to come into the nowness and kind of, it shifts the energy once we do that accepting. And all of that comes about in the practice with this energy. That's where, that's how it is that it helps us move. Yeah. So you can see that on one hand, acceptance is kind of a inward capacity of letting go. You can't really make yourself accept something you don't want to accept. But when you have the capacity to accept something by turning a little bit towards getting interested in what's going on, then you can see that all this movement happens. So the getting interested and curious is actually what gives us that ability to accept what's going on. And then things begin to shift. Yeah?
I would understand that virya is the inner strength or inner energy, and we just let it flow without any guilt.
Yes, yes. I was trying to say that. So he said that he understood virya to be like an inner strength, a inner capacity, and you just let it flow however it is. You don't have to do anything about it, which is it. That is in a, yeah, that's what it is. It's this inner strength. And what turns it on, this, you know, in practice, just think about all the times that we feel like we don't have any strength to do the practice. What turns that inner strength on is our curiosity, our interest, this kind of turning towards the nowness, just being with whatever the nowness is. And from that, all of this movement begins to happen, this kind of willingness or desire to pay attention. That creates all this movement that, like you say, it's an inner strength that arises on its own. But it is such a powerful capacity once it's turned on. Yeah?
Hi. In your description of the power, I'm seeing a couple of patterns in my life on the job where I feel like I reach a certain point, I'm forced to take control. There's another part of my life I see where I'm always pushed to, you know, take over this before something breaks apart, chaos or something. How do I begin to question, is there something else? And how do I begin to question, is there?
Question what?
What else is there aside from that? Is there something else I can look at besides trying to take control?
So her question was that she notices at work that she has this sense of being forced to take control of something or, excuse me?
At a certain point.
At a certain point, yeah. When things are getting a little crazy, it's like. So who, let me just ask one question here. Who's doing the forcing? Do you feel like someone else is forcing you, or do you feel like you are saying, I better take control of this before it gets crazy?
It's probably me. I'm making that choice to step in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I guess for me, I think I would pay less attention to the idea, that story around being controlled or pressured or pushed into doing something, and more about the inner core of whether or not it's trying to control some outcome. You know, because sometimes what we feel like is pressure from outside of us to control something is more because we're not really sure we can manage if things get a little haywire, go a little bonkers. I may not be able to control that. So our way of controlling it is this sense that I have to control it so it won't get bonkers. So you're trying to see how much of your effort is trying to keep things a certain way in which you know you can manage, and how much of it is your own fear of the unknown of how to hold things when things get a little. That's what you're just trying to look at. You're not trying to change it one way or the other. The best thing I can tell you is sort of like, even in trials when it seemed overwhelming, the trial, the amount of work, I'm not sure I can get it done. I really don't like the way the other side is operating. I mean, there's all this stuff going on. When I first started practicing, and I started practicing mindfulness at the same time I started practicing law, there was all this intention to try to apply my practice to make things work. And that's what I'm saying. Virya is pointing towards something else. Virya is pointing towards that learning the inner capacity, that you have the capacity to hold on to what things are going on in this nowness, and not so much about trying to control other people. So as time went on in practice, my work got less and less and less stressful, because I got less and less, and I had less and less and less need to control the outcome, and more and more and more steady with my ability to handle whatever craziness came up. Do you see the difference between the two? Yeah. So you can have the internal character that you can handle craziness, or you can control the outer conditions so there won't be any craziness. I think the internal energy is what practice points to help us be steady with it.
Been doing that a lot, just taking mindfulness to control the outcome.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's, she said that she thinks that she's been doing the same thing I did, which is take mindfulness to control the outcome. That's pretty much the way I saw it for a long time, but that effort, in a way, is futile. That's why it seems like nothing, I mean, it seems like we're always trying to control the outer world, because you can't control for all conditions, and there's going to be some spillage and some craziness out there regardless of what we try to control. So this constant trying to control the world by using mindfulness to do that is the efforting part of what we think of virya as, this ability to control things. I just need more practice time, more energy, more mindfulness. I need to be paying more attention to the breath. I need to set up. I mean, I did everything. I used to set up time so that before a trial, I would sit in the middle of the trial. And then every time I got ready to freak out on some defense attorney, I'd be like, okay, go to your mindfulness, get steady. But it comes from this, what I've found in my life is that need to control comes from a lack of trust in what it is we are doing. What I was doing was trying to open the heart for this courageousness, this sense of capacity to hold difficulty, to sort of do what David said, and be more willing to just accept whatever was coming around. And I tried to control things so I could circumvent this having to kind of accept the stuff I didn't like. But when you actually start practicing more inwardly, like, why do I need for other lawyers to be a certain way? Why do I need for trials to be, why do I need to control everything? And you can begin to see that really I'm just afraid I'm gonna mess up. Or for me, I'm afraid I'm gonna lose, and I cannot be handling the losing. So I'm doing all these things to make sure I don't lose. You see, so we can kind of control things to make sure everything goes the way we want. But the greater blessing is when we're able to trust into our own capacity. And after we spend years and years in practice, we really have way more capacity than we think we have. But we have to be willing to let go and trust this natural inner character, this natural inner strength that comes from practice, that comes from these years of practicing. It's not for naught. It is not just some useless thing there, unless we don't give it permission. Sort of like what Mary Oliver said, we have to get up there and fly. We have to be weightless and then just fly and give ourselves permission to just not do anything and let things be as they are and see if we can actually be with it, no matter how difficult or challenging it is. That's what we're looking for. That's what Virya helps us see. So I better stop here so I can do some announcements.